Hello and welcome to a monumental edition of The Preview. I'm your host, Christopher Gallagher. We are recording at 10 a.m., 10:04 on June the 22nd, 2021, which is, as I've said, potentially a monumental, an incredible day for Scottish football, or it's maybe just again similar what we've been used to for all of our lives. But let's be positive. This is going to be a very positive preview because fucking why not? It's about time we had a bit of positivity with the national team. We will be previewing Scotland versus Croatia, and we'll be previewing that with what I can only describe as your panel of Scotland national team experts, because that's exactly what they are. You're not going to find a more interesting, intelligent panel than these three. We'll start with Erin Connolly. Hello, Erin. How are you?
Hi, mate. I'm very well. How are you?
Not too bad, Erin. Yeah, lovely. Lovely to be back. You did a grand job of hosting the last preview and also the agenda, which was great. Good. We'll get you some hosting gigs next season. Can't wait for that. Should be great. Kieran Devlin, it's a pleasure, sir. He's wearing the brand new top. He looks, you know, I said he's cosplaying as Stephen O'Donnell, and I continue to say that. Hello, how are you, Kieran?
I'm all right. Yeah, I was just saying beforehand that I got this first thing on Saturday morning, literally up 9 o'clock in the dot. Dragged my girlfriend down to it was pouring as well in Edinburgh at that point. Straight to the one near Princes Street and told JD Sports to take my cash. But it's worth it. It's worth it because even if we get pumped tonight, then I've still got this from the time we rattled the nation of England in a major tournament and gave them a knock to their ego. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it. But we're not going to get pumped, which is the important thing. I think I've stolen some of Lindsay's enthusiasm and optimism, and I'm feeling good about tonight.
Love it. Absolutely love it. The third voice of the panel is Lindsay Hamilton. Hello, Lindsay. How are you?
Hi, guys. How are you doing? Very excited. I'm buzzing.
Good. Good. Glad. Happy. It's been an interesting tournament. Obviously, the monumental crushing defeat that kind of put us in our box in a lot of ways against the Czech Republic on the opening day against Hamden. Czech Republic at Hamden was genuinely, for me personally, was soul crushing, soul destroying. But Scotland certainly picked herself up for the game against England, and we're going to touch on that briefly. But we've got an opening question. Obviously, yesterday, Billy Gilmore tested positive for COVID, which means he's unavailable for the Croatia game, but also means he'll be unavailable for 10 days. So he potentially will miss a last 16 tie if we qualify for that. And then there's, you know, varying reports, you know, he might be available for the quarterfinals if we got there, maybe not. But let me just ask you, let's start with the opening question. How big a miss is Billy Gilmore? Erin, we'll start with you.
I mean, I don't want to overplay it because obviously he's just come into the squad. I think it was his first proper international start against England, and I thought he was fantastic, really, really fantastic. When you put it in the context in terms of it being probably his full international debut, I thought he was outstanding. So comfortable on the ball, and we said that in the preview to the game. You know, we thought we needed players in there who could take the ball in tight areas because of how narrow England would play and how congested it would be in there, and Billy Gilmore was the perfect pick for that game. And he held up to expectations, and he was incredible. But in terms of being a huge miss, you know, we've still got good players in that area. You look at, you bring in Ryan Christie, you can bring in Stuart Armstrong, John Fleck to a lesser degree, but there's still good players who can come into that area who can do a job. So he's a big miss, but I think Kieran said it yesterday and we spoke about briefly on the agenda as well. It's not as big a miss as Tierney was against the Czech Republic in my book either. So I think worse things could have happened. And also, I think it's important to say, I hope Billy Gilmore's all right. You know, COVID obviously a really horrible thing to have caught, and a really disappointing time for him, no doubt. You know, I'm sure he'll be gutted, but he's a big miss, but it's not as big a blow as the Tierney in the first game was for me.
I agree with you. Kieran, coming to you on that, I mean, Billy Gilmore was man of the match against England, but, you know, this is typical Scotland where it's like very similar to Celtic as well, when a player has a good game against a high opposition, and everything then kind of falls on their shoulders. You know, he was great, but, you know, it was his debut. So, I mean, if we've got this far without him, you know, surely we can push on.
Yeah, I think Aidan is spot on. And I made this I made this point on Twitter, but I realised that everyone was panicking on Twitter, so just got sent loads of abuse for it. So I realised you shouldn't really post opinions on Twitter when something breaking news happens. That was a rookie error. That was an amateur mistake. But I said, like, Stuart Armstrong is a like for like replacement, and it was a stupid phrasing, but I don't mean that in terms of the similar players. But you don't have to change the system. Like the game plan stays. It's true, and whether that is Armstrong or I saw someone say John Fleck, but I could, there's no chance for me that Fleck's in the conversation. That sure, he may be. Well, we'll get onto that later. But yeah, I think the thing is same. Like, Friday worked really well by playing like a technical midfield, by playing like very composed players. McTominay at centre back worked well. Like the back three worked really well as a unit. Even the wing back. Like, well, we can get into team selection later. But basically, I do think we have to stick to this game plan. We shouldn't be rattled by it. It's disappointing. But you know, I think Robertson spoke about it after the Czech game. Like they weren't fazed by what happened. They just got their focus for an England game, and that paid off. So I think they'll do the same with this. It's disappointing news, but they have contingency plans for this. So I'm still, after the initial like half an hour of feeling pretty upset by it, I'm back on the optimism train.
Good, love it. Lindsay, what about yourself? What's your kind of thoughts on Billy Gilmour?
I am gutted that he's not going to play, because I think England and Croatia are very, very different beasts, and he still managed to hand himself well against England, who, in my opinion, are a much more physical side, especially in that midfield. And he did really, really well. Croatia is incredibly technical, and I just think this was really suited to his game, and it's where he shines best. So, I was definitely gutted that we're missing out on him, but I completely, the guys have brought us back down to earth with that. It could have been worse. And to be honest, I was still waiting this morning. I wasn't, because obviously we were seeing Twitter last night and folk being like, how is there no contact, etc., etc. And I was still waiting, and I still am waiting, if I'm being honest, for news to come out at some point today. So-and-so is tested or so, do you know what I mean? Like, so it could and it still can be a lot worse. So I'm kind of, it's a shame for Gilmour. I hope he's all right, and there's no serious symptoms or anything like that, or no symptoms at all, would be grand for him. But yeah, missing Tierney in the first game was as big a blow as we could have got. And really the right back position for Croatia is the one we need to be attacking tonight, because they're having real problems back there. So Tierney, please don't let Andrew Robertson or Tierney be getting plucked out today with any further COVID testing. I hope that's the end of it, at least for this game taking place tonight. Everything's crossed. But yeah, it's a shame. I think his game suits what we're going to come up against tonight. And that attacking three in the middle were fantastic for us. So yeah, it's a shame, but you've got people that can fill in, as the boys said. Not John Fleck, I mean, let's be honest. But you could even, I mean, I don't know if we will, but, you know, we've got lots of different people to play in there. We'll talk about that later. But it's a loss, but could be worse.
Yeah. Okay, I might sound like a hun, right?
Uh-oh. I mean, you but often do.
You'd give John Fleck the captaincy, is what you're saying.
John Fleck for me is probably the most like for like in terms of players for Billy Gilmour, like in terms of just like for like and how they play their game,
as in they were both in the Rangers Academy.
Fuck up, you know, right? Fuck up.
You've got a poster of both of them on your wall.
Shit, this is my own fault. I've opened myself up for this, deservedly so. But no, I just, well, you know what, we'll come. I wouldn't play John Fleck, by the way. Absolutely, I wouldn't play for him. But in terms of just like for like, in terms of, you know, retaining possession and winning the ball back, and that, they're probably the most. I wouldn't have John Fleck in the squad. Joking aside, I wouldn't, because I just don't think you would ever rely on him. This is the time where Clark,
Jack.
Right? Shit, again, it's my own fault. I've opened myself up. You're right to take pot shots.
What's Richard Goff up to these days,
Keith? Right, okay, a joke's a joke, Kieran.
Is he in your infant?
Oh. Right, okay, a joke's a joke.
We're just going to continue the rest of this interview with the crying Vickies.
Yeah.
the Ferguson and McGregor.
Look, for a start, Aaron, I don't like divers on my team, so that's why Ian Durant wouldn't be in. When it comes to a guy like John Fleck, joking aside, right, this is the time you should play him. And see, if you don't play him, then what's the point of having him in the squad? I think a guy like John Fleck is taking a position that should be given to a younger player, because John Fleck's not going to play. You know, there's positions in that squad where they could have went to even really inexperienced young guys who wouldn't ever think of having a game. And that's what disappoints me about Clark. And that's what Ryan Gold. Why could Ryan Gold not have sat on the bench the way John Fleck has? Because, as I say, this is when you would play Fleck if you're going to play him at all. He's not going to play him, so what's the point? That's what frustrates me about international football. That's what frustrates me a little bit about Steve Clark, in that he has his 26 and that's it. And I understand that you need to be comfortable with the players, you need to know the players, you're trying to create a club atmosphere and such. But it just frustrates me that is a different argument, because that's a pre-tournament thing. But there we go. England 0, Scotland 0. Has been Lindsay made great points in terms of different, you know, the difference between Croatia and England. England are very physical. They have the Yorkshire Pirlo, of course. The Yorkshire Pirlo. A nation of 50 million people who play with a 2-1 pivot. Two defensive midfielders, of course, against Scotland. Good for them. I think they'll do well in the tournament.
Can we all just like talk about how shite Declan Rice is?
I was just about to say that. How shite is he?
And also, I hate Foden now as well. This is just very scattergun and everything, but I really hate Phil Foden. He's a diving, greeting face, be prick.
See, if we're talking about diving, do you know who the worst is? And by the way, I noticed that even before he played against us, and I've probably never noticed it before because I've actually been a bit of a fan of his. Harry Kane is chocolate. Yeah. Are you kidding me on? Yeah. I've never noticed this. I watched the first game actually against Croatia, and I was baffled with the limited bit of touch, and he just goes. I was really, really sure. I mean, maybe this is something that he's known for in the Premier League. I don't tend to watch, I don't tune into the English Premier League every week because I really can't stand it, to be honest. Watch the odd game, watch them in Champions League or Europa League, I suppose, this season. But oh my God, chocolate, absolute chocolate. He's so frustrating to me. That was the worst for me. And Sterling's dive was up there and all, but that was, Jesus, worst of the tournament.
So I listened to the preview you guys did, and it was really good. I genuinely really enjoyed it. It got me in the mood a little bit. And I wasn't looking forward to things on the end, because I thought we would have lost a couple of goals. I thought, you know, I was thinking back to the last time we played at Wembley when James Forrest was sensational, but just couldn't finish. We ended up with a 3-0 defeat. I think it was a couple of headers, set piece stuff, really basic stuff, but Scotland actually played really well. It was a 3-0 defeat, but they played really well. I was expecting something similar, but we didn't get that. We got a disciplined, progressive, well put together, tactically focused, well positioned Scotland team where everyone to a man knew exactly what they were supposed to do for the whole 90 minutes, even when England changed up their tactics. How impressed were you, Aaron, in terms of the whole outlay of what Scotland did?
I mean, I think, similar to yourself, after the Czech Republic game, I was really downbeat. Really, really downbeat. You know, I thought that was a game where we had to try and make an effort to go for it a little bit. You know, not gung-ho in any way, understanding. I said it consistently. If you want to go gung-ho attacking, Steve Clark isn't the manager for you, and we all know that. And we knew what we were getting with Steve Clark. We'd get a pragmatic manager who would get his results when we probably weren't expected to get results. And I clung on to that hope in the lead up to the England game, that just hoping Steve Clark would give us something that we know he's capable of in terms of setting up the team to go and get a result. I think when we done the preview naming the team, I thought I was being ambitious, putting people like Gilmore in and move McTominay back one. I didn't actually think Clark would do that. I thought it was the right way to go. I had no foresight of Steve Clark doing that, but he did. And I think you need to fair play to him. Absolutely.
Yeah.
He deserves kudos for that. You know, it takes a lot to put in I know Billy Gilmore's highly rated, very highly rated, and rightly so. He's a fantastic football player. But this is a boy who has played minimal minutes of football professionally. Certainly been nowhere near a major tournament, nothing like that. To go and put him in against England at Wembley, probably the biggest game of our, the biggest game in a generation it was up until this game. You know, once we get the result, this game becomes bigger. But to put him in, to move McTominay back when McTominay had found a little bit of a home in midfield, to stick with O'Donnell, which I think is probably the biggest call he made, when everyone, the full nation, was on the guy's back, to stick with him is another massive call that Clark deserves credit for, because even myself, you know, O'Donnell didn't look like football against Czech Republic, and then he goes and puts in a really good performance. So I think what we got on Friday was, I mean, I don't want to say Steve Clark masterclass. I think, you know, I don't want to overdo it. At the end of the day, we drew the game. If we won the game, it would have been a masterclass. I think what we got, though, was the best of Steve Clark, someone who is really, really competent at setting up teams not to lose good football games. And by the way, it's not like we just sat in and see all this pish that we're seeing about Scotland had heart and desire and all that. Everybody who crosses the line on a football pitch has heart, desire, passion, wants to run about, wants to try and get results right. I can't buy into we just wanted it more than them and all that shite. Ish. Or it meant more to us. It's all bullshit, and it's all hiding behind something that they're just not a very good side. They're nowhere near the side they think they are. Scotland set up and absolutely nullified their threats perfectly. And then what we done is when we got possession, we kept the ball. We kept it off them. And it's just, you know, it's a saying as old as it comes, but see if you can keep possession in difficult areas and keep possession of a football, the other team can score. And I think that's what Scotland done really well. I think that's where Gilmore came into it, and especially he's not had as much praise lavished on him. I mean, we done it yesterday in the agenda because we're Celtic fans, but I thought Callum McGregor was also outstanding. A player who's had a really, really difficult season. There's question marks over his ability to step up, take games with a scruffy neck. You know, is he a leader? He's had all these questions, but I think what we've seen on Friday night was he can be all those things as long as he knows his defined role. And that's what Steve Clark's good at, you know, setting up a team, giving them defined roles, saying, you do this, we'll get a result of the game. And we did. And we done it well. You know, it wasn't about Scotland digging in and last blocks off the line and all that stuff. It wasn't about that. It was a fairly even game over the course of it. And in fact, you know, we could have nicked it. But I thought technically, especially in midfield, I thought technically we were stronger than them. And that comes back to the point about, you know, them raving about Phillips after a game against Croatia and hearing how good fucking Declan Rice is. Honestly, I don't know if Declan Rice would get in the Scotland midfield.
Hey, it's a fair point. He was certainly, Declan Rice is just the blandest of bland that just blands about the pitch. Kieran, you know, Scotland, Aaron's completely spot on in terms of, you know, what Scotland did, but, you know, the passages of play, one-touch stuff, playing little triangles in midfield, working our way down the wings, Stephen O'Donnell overlapping really well, Andy Robertson putting in a magnificent shift to defend and attack. It didn't seem like Scotland. It seemed like a really good team.
I think this is what I got quite excited by, is that it's like that this feels like what Scotland can become. You know, like Tierney, Robertson, they're not quite at their peak yet. I think Robertson's like a few weeks older than I am. And Tierney's what? He's just turned 24.
Yeah.
We've got Gilmore coming in. We've got Patterson and Turnbull weighing in behind. And you've got people like Shea Adams. All these guys, you know, they're not in their late 20s yet. And I feel like this is a natural progression we can move into. Where you see, like, that midfield, we've not done something like that before. We've, like, that level of technique and stuff, and it works so well. I think that's what I was most excited by, is this is becoming a really good generation at the moment, and they're not at their peak yet. And as you say, like, we've not really seen that before. And, okay, you can say, like, it helps that Robertson's had his two best games in the Scotland jersey. It helps that Tierney. I also feel like we are so accustomed to how good Tierney is that we sort of take it for granted. Because I think he was the best player on the pitch. Like O'Donnell was outstanding, Gilmore was outstanding in their own way, but Tierney was the best player on that pitch. We just take it for granted now.
That's true.
And Hanley was brilliant as well. But I mean, Tierney, both going forwards defensively, he had a number of tackles that were just ridiculous. There were a number of times where he just, like, against Foden or something, he just win the ball back and then play, like, an incredible through ball and stuff. And we just accept it now because it's normal. Like, I do think he's probably is Scotland's best player now. Like, I love Andy Robertson, but I think Tierney, what Tierney's, the step up he's done the last 18 months or so has just been incredible. Yeah. But as you say, like, the style of football we're playing, like, it was just, it's complete bollocks. It's like the most bitter of bitter bollocks when they were saying, oh, Scotland just sat and defended. It's like, we were better on the ball in the midfield than you were. I remember there was a passage in the second half that I really remember when I think it was the three midfielders worked together. It was like, McGregor, like, backheeled it under pressure to Gilmore. And Gilmore, first time, like, an amazing, like, pass up the pitch to McGinn. McGinn turned and dribbled, and it just bypassed the complete England midfield, and they looked like complete arseholes, and then we had a counter-attack. I think the only thing really missing from the Scotland team, and I really like Lyndon Dykes and Shea Adams for what they do, we just missed that clinical finisher. Like, I think Shea Adams was outstanding. He's got a lot. He's basically, like, a complete striker in every other way apart from finishing. I think that's the one thing we're missing. But other than that, I think this is a really exciting team with a number of, like, 18, 19, 20, 21-year-olds coming through that will really replenish that in the next coming seasons. You know, like, after this, Gilmore is going to be a mainstay for 15 years. But then we have Patterson, Turnbull. There's a couple of others out there. We do need some centre-backs and a goalkeeper. But other than that, I'm really excited about it.
Lindsay, I wanted to raise that point with you in terms of going forward. Dykes and Adams put in a hell of a shift. What did you make of their performance?
I thought they were both good. This was kind of what we wanted to see. They just complement one another really well because you've got a sort of natural target man in Dykes. His touch could always be a little bit better. He can be quite frustrating sometimes, but it's not easy to do that. It's never easy to go up and be the target man, I find. Shea Adams just has that little bit of brilliance and a little bit of flair, and there's always a wee trick in him. And they're difficult to play against. Dykes could have had four goals or something by now if he had a decent, it's terrible saying that, I'm sure he has a decent finisher, but he's just been a bit unfortunate with a few chances. But that's what I'm begging to see tonight. I said this yesterday, we were watching, I think it was North Macedonia versus Holland last night, if I get the right teams, because I watched a few games last night and I ended up getting confused, but I just watching, like, Holland get their goals, and then we watch the highlights later, and I was like, I just want us to get a goal. I just want to have that moment. I want one of them to have that moment as well. And I hope the boys can do it. I wish we'd gone with them for the first game. It's everything in hindsight, but it absolutely had to happen. Because I think a lot of people were asking for, oh, it should have been Che Adams instead of Dykes. And I'm like, but would that work on his own as well? I don't think Che Adams up there on his Todd would be any much better. In fact, it might be even be worse because he's not really a natural hit up to him, and see what happens. But yeah, hopefully we see the moment, a moment from them tonight. They've been great. They were great to watch, and did cause them problems. Really enjoyed them. Do you know what? I like Dykes. I came on the last podcast and said the same. I think he kind of comes into a bit of stick. He hasn't scored. He's had his chances. He's definitely had the most chances, probably any of the Scotland players this tournament anyway. But I like him. He keeps himself busy. I say that all the time. I said that about Cristiano. But I do like him. And I think he's good. A good natural sort of target man. And I don't think it's an easy job. I never played striker, certainly, because I don't like it. So I takes a certain kind of madman to play up there. Do you know what I mean?
I do. what I would say is I like the idea that from a Lyndon Dykes point of view, I think the casual fan, the casual supporter will look, and we will bring striking expert Erin Connolly in just one second.
The madman.
Absolutely. The Phil Foden hair. The thing about it regarding watching international football, right? So at the very, very top level in terms of your France's, your Germany's, your top teams, the strikers scoring in those games are legitimately world-class players. See, when you get into that middle section, which is where I would put Scotland, I'd put Scotland in that middle section. A lot of these countries, like your Austrias, your Scotlands, your even your Denmarks, you know, like Denmark would be high-end of that middle section. But goal scorers are really hard to come by. I think people just assume it's football, you score goals, but they're really, really hard to come by at this level. So I'm very willing to, you know, Dykes has a very specific role. I like the fact we've got a really progressive midfield, technically gifted and full of just these great ideas. But I also like the fact we've got a cut. Our back three is defines Scotland. We've got this technically fantastic left-sided centre-back who's one of the most modern types of footballers you'll see. And we've got Grant Hanley sitting beside him. He's a fucking stopper. And that's what I love. I love the mix of, you know, progressive ideas, but also fucking football. And that's what our forward line is, I think. I think we've got Lyndon Dykes, who is a focal point. He's an out ball. He's the guy we can target. But running off him, Adams is technically really good. You don't really know what he's going to do. And he always seems to be in control with the ball. His finishing needs to improve. That's 100%. We understand that. But he's finding his feet at this level, Erin. I'll bring you in, Erin.
I just think as a partnership, they work really well. And I think you can sort of carry someone who's less technically proficient in the style and then Dykes if you're going to play a strike partnership. I think there's a really interesting aspect of it that football has obviously changed a lot, a hell of a lot, and will continue to change over the course of the next few years as well. And I think you probably, I just have this feeling you'll see a return of the target man, if you like. It's kind of gone out the game a little bit. I think the more you see teams sort of press high, want to go this all-action pressing style, I think you'll see teams start to counter that. We'll say, well, see if you're going to press me, I'm going to bang it up to my big target man and we'll get in and around them. And we'll see then how you counter that. Because if teams are going to continually, you know, press high, have high lines, someone like Lyndon Dykes is a nightmare to play against then, because it gives the team that you're trying to press a real outlet. And yes, Dykes' touch and stuff at times lets him down. But what he does is he doesn't make it easy for defenders. You won't see anyone go and win a clear header and header at 40 yards against Dyke, because he'll be in their face, he'll be up and around them, he'll be challenging for the headers. So while it's not pretty at times, he gives you a real outlet. But Gal, like you say, what we have in the squad, you know, from defence forward, if you pick the right players, it's real progression, real players who are good on the ball, who want to move it forward. And that's where Adams comes into it as well. You know, if you can get McTominay, Tierney moving the ball into a midfield of McGregor, Gilmore, Armstrong, McGinn, whoever's in there, and then get it forward. Adams will pick up pockets of space because Lyndon Dykes will stay really high, really central, and he'll occupy centre-half areas. And I think it's really important in the way that we try and play that we have someone like Lyndon Dykes. Now, he's going to frustrate you. He's got teams. I think, again, that's just something you have to put up with. It's very difficult, very, very difficult to find a striker who can do it all, which is why Clark sort of settled on the two of them and they work so well. But Lyndon Dykes is a massive role in this team. I think we said it way back, Gal, I remember talking to you about it. You know, he changed our qualification chances.
Yep.
At the time, we were really struggling. He came in and really changed the dynamic of the squad. And by no means, are Scotland a team who are banging the ball long. But if we're under pressure in games, we have the opportunity to do that. And Lyndon Dykes will give you an outlet and an option. And then you can get players around them. But also what we can do is we can play a little bit. And we've got really good technical players. So it's given us a really nice balance to the team. And I think, I mean, I'm a huge Lyndon Dykes fan and I'm shocked to say it. I said in the preview last week, I think, you know, when he was first muted to moving away from Livingston, I couldn't believe some of the clubs being linked to him, but I can now see why people would take a chance on him. And I think he's still got a bit of development to go as well. And Che Adams, only 24, still growing into this level. I think those two over the next couple of years can really go and create a real good international partnership.
Yeah. You know, I remember watching a couple when Lyndon Dykes first broke in, messaging you, Erin, being like, this is different. This is a new dimension. And it is the idea of, I just like the idea that we're a hybrid. We've got technically great players. We've got players, as Erin says, who wants to progress the ball, wants to turn over the ball, wants to keep possession. But we do have Lyndon Dykes, Grant Hanley, and just those players, it's a hybrid style, and I like that. I think Scotland need to develop. It's like Celtic and all that. We just need to develop our own style. Fuck what everybody else is doing. What's our strengths, and let's work them together. Stephen O'Donnell, the redemption of Stephen O'Donnell. I don't think we have to touch on this too much because there's been a lot said about it over the last couple of days. There was that great interview with him in BBC. Lindsay, that interview touched a lot of people. It touched me. I was genuinely quite emotional seeing how you very rarely see a footballer be so open and honest about the fact that he knows that the fans didn't want him picked and the fact that the manager stuck with him, and, you know, he knows he's got a tough job in his hand. Stephen O'Donnell, Lindsay.
I mean, there was not a single cliche about his interview. It wasn't this shite that we've been getting peddled all week about, I just showed heart and the gaffer stood behind me and blah, blah, blah. It's none of that. It was literally like, I spoke to Robbo about it, my captain. He was sound. Spoke to Steve Clark. He wanted to keep me in, blah, blah. I know I let myself down, et cetera, et cetera. This is obviously not verbatim what he said, but, you know, this was the crux of it. And I was like, that's the most honest, probably, interview I've ever heard of a player about a game of football. It was just so refreshing. And it was insightful as well. It kind of gave you a wee glimpse of how they work, how Robertson works, you know, with the players. Because I think there's been critics as well about Robertson, et cetera. And I thought that in itself showed what we're about. We're human. We're going to fuck up. We're going to have some struggles along the way. And he did, but there was no arrogance to it either. There was no sort of, you know, there was so much noise, you know, earlier in the week, blah, blah, blah. No saying that anymore. There was none of that. It was just like, I'm on fuck up, really wanted to make up for it. Gave my best. Yeah. Hopefully it was good enough. On to the next.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Really, really enjoyed it. Great conversation.
See, the fact that he said that he knows he'll be in the chopping block for the next game. I thought that was really, you know, he knows that this is an ever-evolving situation and you're only as good as your last game.
I'm pretty sure he sort of stressed as well how sort of, he knows how lucky he is. And he said, this is a first. Like, this is, you know, we're all new to this. And I was like, how? It's just such a cool thing for a professional to go, we don't know what we're doing. Like, without saying it, they're no idiots, do you know what I mean? They know how to win a game of football. But it's like, this is new to the fans, it's new to us. You know, we're very, very lucky, very fortunate to be here. But that doesn't mean we're just here for the sake of it and we'll see how this goes. Like, we're here to do well. If you've not watched it, listened to it, whatever, I would definitely go back. It will make you love Stephen O'Donnell even more. Because, I mean, I was a big critic of him the last game. I really, really was. And I still have issues with the... I say this, I've got to laugh at myself now, but I was like, he's not that player to bomb forward. I said it the last pod. You can go back and listen to it and tweet me. I don't care. I'll fight you. But, like... He was bursting like that in that England game. Me and my brother were sat watching it and I was like, that's him out of the game. I was like, there's no way he's doing that again. And he did it, and he did it. And I was like, well, fair enough. So, he ran through a brick wall the other night. I like Stephen O'Donnell. I think he's a great player. He struggled. Well, he's very good then. B+.
Come on.
Yeah, I'm not taking criticism for you, girl, and you've just, you know, John flicked it to the max. So here you go. I'll take it for the other boys, but come on, you can't come in and fly in. We'll get John Fleck into that game tonight. Come on.
John Fleck. So
now, watch this. It'll come back and bite me. He'll have a belter, score Scotland's winning goal, and then I'll have Fleck, whatever number he is, on the back of my shirt.
John Fleck, David Robertson at fullback, of course. Dave McPherson. Let's get him involved. We joke. See, Stephen O'Donnell, it's a really great redemption story, and I thought he was fantastic against England. The problem is, I think, that Stephen O'Donnell does really well in a specific game, in a specific style. We saw it at Kilmarnock. He does well when the expectation isn't necessarily to win the game, or, you know, how Scotland set up to nullify, but then to kind of, turnover as quickly as possible. And that's great. That's not going to be the same at Hampden against Croatia, is it, Kieran? And I think, with no disrespect, Stephen O'Donnell took all the negative, all the negativity on Monday after that Czech game. So we're not going to be more negative to Stephen O'Donnell, because he did redeem himself and he did great. It's just about style and it's about expectation, Kieran.
Exactly. And I've been doing, the past 2 days I've been going on a Croatia deep dive, and it's so obvious their biggest weakness is fullbacks. And the other thing is their biggest strength is Perisic on the left.
Yeah,
like, he's basically the only player they have left from that golden generation who's still at their peak. And we saw against the Czechs how dangerous he was. Like, how easy is it to see him get that ball in that space and do that to McTominay and O'Donnell in that sort of, like, space between the two of them? Like, that was our biggest weakness against England. And that's exactly what Perisic is going to try to exploit. And this is, as you say, like, like, we're so happy for Stephen O'Donnell, but if we want to qualify, there's no room for sentimentality. We have to play our best team tactically that looks to do that. And I really think having Forrester Fraser, right wing back, would be a great idea for two reasons. One, it pins Perisic back because he will have to like properly track back. If you're having someone like Forrest against that 19-year-old left back, you know, he's going to have an absolute torrid time. So Perisic will spend less time trying to exploit our right flank and more time trying to cover. And also, it's just a real dangerous option. Like we saw when Forrest came on the last 15 minutes, what he can do when he finds that kind of space. I think we'd really have to go for it. I think you mentioned like the right back for Sayoko. Like, he's a good crosser of the ball, but he's really slow and he looks really fallible defensively. That is, as you mentioned, like the Robertson-Tierney overlap, that's going to absolutely destroy him. Because I was watching the England game back, and there's a number of times where Trippier overlaps Mason Mount, but because he doesn't have a left foot, because they did that weird thing where they played a right-footed left-back. And there's so many times where Trippier gets in a really good crossing position, then just cuts back onto his right foot because he can't cross with his left. Can you imagine the damage Tierney or Robertson would do in these kind of situations? And I just feel like we can't be sentimental about this. We just have to say, right, Forrest Fraser, we need to go for the jugular here. We need to score a goal. We haven't, like, I think the combined, I know expected goals aren't for everyone's taste, but the combined from the two games is 2.71 and we've got zero goals from it. We do need to score a goal to go through. Like, the arithmetic, because of last night's results, the arithmetic for qualifying is so simple. We win, we go through. But to do that, we have to score goals. So we really need to set up. And there is that balance, obviously, attack, and then Croatia counter and we do whatever. But I think, I don't know about you guys, but I really want to see us just from the off, just go and on the ascendancy and attack them.
We'll get to the Croatia game. Sorry, I just want to finish on the England game because this is something that kind of Lindsay wanted to highlight, and I think she's right too. Ratings on the BBC website of Scotland versus England. So we've got Billy Gilmore was player of the match. Robertson 7.12, Tierney 6.9. I don't know, was 0.98, 6.98. Fuck.
There was what? Is this the Sky ones?
No, this is the BBC ones.
BBC was Gilmore 7.46 or something, and he was man of the match. I thought
that's true. Yeah,
and I was like, are you actual joking? Like, I know they don't matter. I'm sure the players don't look, but it's just a pure insult, man. Like,
but it's, I don't understand points. So, how can you give someone 0.77, 6.77 for Stephen O'Donnell? Like, basically everyone gets a six or below. Like, yeah. You know, and it's just like, and I'm not even going to give the Sky ones the time of fucking day because it's a disgusting disgrace. Callum McGregor was like the same as Calvin Phillips. I don't even remember Calvin Phillips fucking playing in that game. Genuinely, like, he was anonymous. You know what I mean? So, I mean, for me, the player ratings and the media reaction, as we've all kind of touched on, hiding something, Lindsay.
Sorry, just to add, because it was me that was like, I want to bring up these ratings, but to add salt to the wound. Sure. Last night, watching, this is them doing it to us, by the way, but sitting watching the final game last night, I'm trying to think who it was now. Was it the Russia game? Russia-Denmark, perhaps? And bloody Mr. Potato Head, as I like to call him, they did not once mention. They actually didn't, because I then went on Twitter and I was like, have I missed something? Like, did they even cover what this means for Scotland? They did not. And even at half-time, so Finland playing? It was 0-0 at half-time,
Belgium,
I'm pretty sure.
Finland-Belgium.
Belgium, thank you, that was right. And there was no even any analysis to be like, if Finland get a goal here, how can Finland get a goal here? Because Finland could have still went through.
Yeah.
From my... remember if I've got right, my memory right, and I'm like, what? There was nothing, there was no analysis of that game in any sort of form, and I just, it's just poor. Like, people want this. Like, I'm not fucking some XG expert, I am far from it, but like, try to learn. And even at that, this is what people tune in to see. Like, we want to see like all the wee fancy wee gizmos that he's doing match the day every week, and we want to see it for these national teams that we might be playing in the next round, or that we've got in our cutting, or that we've got like in our sweepstakes, sorry, at the work. Like, it's just buy into it, man. They didn't even mention Wales, like, or any of that from like the night before. And you're like, what?
Lindsay, they didn't even realise that England had qualified because of the results until like the end of the show.
Aye, because so, I actually had to say to my brother, because I was like, because it was after, Mr. Potato Head tweeted out about
who the fuck is Mr. Potato? Hold on a minute, who the fuck is Mr. Potato Head?
Gary Lineker.
Okay, fair enough.
Potatoes, crisps.
Shanks crisps is what I would say.
I thought it was like Shearer because he's bald.
That's what I thought as well.
We shouldn't mention Lineker and Potatoes after his fucking tweet last week.
That's a good point, actually. That was another absolute stormer. He tweeted out last night about how the four best third place system is just a nonsense, blah blah blah. And I'm like, this system has been in place for like a long time. It's been used in the World Cup. It's been used
1982 World Cup.
It was nonsense, a tweet to put out.
1982, 86 World Cup. It was used. Yep. The guy's a privileged twat who doesn't care.
Yeah.
He doesn't care about any sort of equality in terms of, you know, given. He's just
this
a
was
dick.
The same guy that was going on about how England shouldn't have to play wee teams. Well, you just get absolutely scuffed. I know it was 0-0, but let's be honest. You thought we were in for a pumping and it never happened. Oh. And then the same guy will celebrate them, the EPL, getting max 5 Champions League slots can they get now if you win the FA and all that stuff.
Lindsay,
2 Europa League spots. Like,
Lindsay, look, the thing is, there's 4 people here and none of us have defecated in public.
I've got something to tell you guys.
Oh, shit.
Yourself.
Oh, no.
As soon as I said that, I thought maybe one of them have shot themselves in public. There's a chance. But
was that the 1990 World Cup?
Yeah, he shot himself in public. What if people don't remember as well is that he smelled his fingers afterwards. Anyway, the Croatia, we'll focus on Croatia for a little bit more and then we'll move on to how we expect Scotland. In fact, but even before that, from the permutations in terms of qualification, they were fully resolved yesterday in terms of what we need to do because of the Belgium-Finland result, because of the Denmark result and because of the Austria result. Goals don't matter. Scotland just need to win this game. So it could be 1-0, it could be 4-0, it doesn't really matter. We just need to win the game. And if we win, this will be the biggest result in the history of the Scottish national team. There'll be no bigger squad, there'll be no bigger experience, there'll be no bigger result in the history of the national team. And that's why I'm both very excited and absolutely terrified. Because that expectation seems to crush us every single time.
I mean, my whole life supporting Scotland has been disappointment after disappointment. Anytime we feel that we're getting close, we fucking lose away to Georgia.
It's always Georgia
for 2 of the campaigns, at least it was anyway. The Italy result is the one that we all remember, never a foul. I'm terrified, I'm not going to lie. I'm excited about it, and I'm sure once the game gets around, the optimism will really kick in. I'll put the Scotland up on in a few hours, but I am absolutely terrified. I think I said this last night, I was talking to people last night about the game, and I'm like, and we're all sitting going, right, what's the Russia result, what's the Belgium result, great, all we need to do is win. But the team we need to beat just played in the World Cup final 3 years ago. Now you can say whatever you want about them being, you know, the few of them have got on a bit, you know, a lot of them are probably in the last tournament, they're not quite the same side. But Luka Modric, you know, Ivan Perisic, Rebic, Kramaric, even Lovren, you know, all these guys, Kovacic in the middle of the park, you know, they've got an incredible team. And I know they've not, you know, I've watched both their games now, they've not hit the heights yet. But I think it's important to remember as well, this is win or bust for Croatia. And it's a really good Croatia team for it to be win or bust for. So it's going to be a topsy-turvy game, I'd say. It's going to be fucking hell to watch, I think. I'm sure the optimism will kick in and Scotland will get the job done. But I think it's important that I think for my own sanity and safety, I'm just going to remain as calm as I can and temper my expectations as much as I can. Because as you say, Gal, I can't remember the last time Scotland got a big result. I don't know if it's ever happened in terms of, you know, I know we've beat France a couple of times, beat the Netherlands and then lost in the replay.
Never when it counts. Never when it counts.
Never. I can't pinpoint at any point in my life. You can speak about the Serbia 1-1. We should have beaten Serbia.
The Netherlands one's a big one, but even in England, the Euro 2000, like we beat them 1-0 and then went and got scuffed 3-0, wasn't it?
We'd already lost 2-0, didn't we?
We lost
2-0 at Hampden. We went 1-0 up. Christian Daly has a header in the last minute that David Seaman somehow saves. It's always glorious failure. Yeah.
I think it's Friday night. Friday night might be the biggest result in my Scotland career in terms of we needed to get something from that game to stay in this tournament. So that could be the biggest result I've seen as a Scotland fan, and that worries me massively.
Well, the biggest result I've seen is when we beat Sweden 2-0 at the 1980 World Cup.
Was that the 90s? When Privilege 90s fan?
No, but joking aside though, like the 1990 World Cup, we lost to Costa Rica, we beat Sweden 2-0, or 2-1, sorry, and then we play Brazil, and all we need is a draw, and it gets to the 87th minute, and Jim Leighton makes an absolute arse of it, you know. And
too much Vaseline in his eyebrows.
Eyebrows. Can't see.
But it is just that sort of, like, again, we've had so many glorious failures. Kieran, see the fact that Croatia need to win as well. Could that work into our hands?
Potentially, yeah. I think, I don't know, like, I'm caught in two minds between one to go for it and also maybe thinking about countering effectively, because their midfield is ridiculously talented. Like, Kovacic, Brozovic and Modric, like, on the ball, that's just obscene. Like, in possession, that's one of the best midfields in the world, but they're not athletic. They're not, you know, they're very slow moving. Modric turns 36 in 2 months. Kovacic and Brozovic, for all their talent on the ball, they're pretty slow. And you look at players like McGregor, like McGinn, like Armstrong, when we start them, they're a lot quicker, they're a lot more aggressive than they are. And I feel if we, like, soak up the pressure and then we just press them and win the ball back and go after them, I think so. And they just look, I know what Aidan's saying, but they just look so mediocre against the Czechs and against England. I really think they're there to be got at. And if they go in, like, we're not going to, you know, we know how focused the team is after what Robertson was saying before the England game and after it. I don't think Scotland are going to take this lightly. They're going to be absolutely intent and focused on this. It's whether Croatia treats Scotland complacently. So, yeah, I think I absolutely get what Aidan is saying, but I really think they're quite fallible. And they also have weaknesses that play into our strengths. If we press their midfield with McGinn, with McGregor, etc., they're going to make mistakes, and then we can counter on them. And, you know, especially someone like, I'm excited at the idea of Adams running at Lovren and Vida, like those big guys who, like, have a ton of a cruise liner. You know, now someone like Adams is going to win so many. I'm sorry about that one.
Cruise liner, Jesus Christ.
So posh.
Sorry, Gil.
I was just running out of. I forgot what boats turn like. I feel like we have players that can really do damage to them, and I really hope that we go in not complacent but confident, because they are there for the taking. And as you say, like, this is massive. But they don't. The team don't seem fazed by it. They really don't. You know, they saw the England game afterwards. Like, oh, yeah, we had our plan. Like McGregor and McGinn after the game, we had our game plan. We stuck to it. We got this great result. They just seem really intent and focused. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And then, you know, this is 10 minutes in, we could go or go down, and then I'll be distraught. Like, go for a walk and miss the rest of the game, even though I'm technically supposed to be working it. But fuck it, let's do it.
I think, obviously, Croatia, I think you're right, those players are all technically really good. I think they'll want to slow the game down. They'll want to kind of tease us out. I think if Scotland have if we play a pace that really presses them back and really quick counters, quick turnovers, I think they can be got at. They're all technically really good. They're all really, really intelligent. Modric is still a fantastic player. But I think you're right, Kieran. They have looked a little leggy in the two games. They've not looked necessarily like they're firing on all cylinders. This is very much the end. This is like the end of a really, really fantastic team. And let's not underestimate how good these players are. We're not. But sometimes teams do just come to an end where, even though they're still great players there, it's just time for them to move on. And I think this will be a lot of those players' last tournament.
It's too soon for that talk, Gil. Fuck's sake, the season's just finished.
Oh, Jesus Christ, we're going into dangerous territory at this point. But, you know, 11 shot. They had 11 shots against the Czechs, but only two of them were on target. One goal from that. So they're not exactly clinical in front of a goal. You could say the same for us. But, you know, you look at, people are saying, you know, Scotland haven't scored yet. England have only scored one goal. Croatia have only scored one goal. You know, it's not, we're not far away from, you know, our XG is basically a goal a game, essentially, and we've not scored that goal yet. So that goal, we just need to find it. By the way, I just wanted to make one point about, you were talking about our midfield. Euro 92. McAllister, McStay. Gilmore, McGregor. There's comparisons there. There really is. Not in terms of where those players were at that point, but like in terms of just technically gifted midfield who works together. And McAllister and McStay in Euro 92 were sensational together. They didn't play a lot of games together. They played those three games together and they were fucking unbelievable. Don't know why they didn't play a lot more games after that. But this is the thing. Whenever Scotland seem to have something that works, they don't always push forward with it. You can, you know, and that's, and I know obviously Billy Gilmore's dropped out, but I'm just really excited about everything. Let's focus on Scotland. Lindsay, how do we approach this? I don't even necessarily want to hear your teams. I'll get all your teams. We'll create a team ourselves. But how does Scotland approach this? What's your takes on it?
So I was listening to you earlier discussing the team, and for me, Scotland right now is a mixture of the old school and the new school. And I want to look at Croatia as if it's the old school, but I think they're actually quite like us. But I also think Croatia they don't quite have the identity as a team that they had the last World Cup, etc. I think they've struggled with that. I think they struggle physically. I think they struggle with set pieces. And I think that's the weaknesses we need to try and latch onto. And I think also how strange that it's set pieces that we also struggle with. I'm worried. My worry is that this is going to be too dogged and we're going to cancel one another.
No, don't say that.
I know, shocking, isn't it? But it's going to be strange. It's going to be us trying to attack on the left, them trying to attack on the right, because they've got very good left sort of side, but like the what's his name, Joseph Brekalo at Wolfsburg loves to cut inside. If O'Donnell's playing, that's a concern for me, I'm not going to lie. Who else have you got out there? But Kovacic kind of play. I know he's in sort of centre, but he sort of plays in that left side. It is a bit of a worry for me. Aaron's just mentioned all the sort of the bigger sort of names in there, your Modric and Perisic, etc. But they've got this fantastic kind of supporting cast. A lot of them Dynamo Zagreb players. Zagreb famously sort of put Spurs out of the Europa League with a hat-trick goal. The guy's no playing. I think it was, is it Orsic? Can't mind how you pronounce his name. I don't think he's in the squad, but yeah, they've got talent too, but I'm very excited. You've seen me, nobody else on here seen me because it's a podcast, Lindsay. Yeah, I don't know. But Kieran was talking about how the right-back position is a massive concern. The centre-backs, for me, are also a massive concern. Get at Lovren, are you kidding? I used to watch him at Liverpool when I did actually like Liverpool, and I used to watch them a lot. And yeah, get at him at headers. Get big dikes on him. I honestly think set pieces tonight could be huge. I was a little bit disappointed. I think I wrote that in the group chat about, I thought Robertson played great, but some of his delivery into the box for me was just not good enough. This seems to be a real issue. I don't know what it is. What is it with Scottish players and we can't hit corners and free kicks and hitting the first man? It's honestly, I said to my dad, we were sitting watching it, and I was like, you would get lynched for that. It's in the league. Like, you would get murdered if you did that. It's in the league. I don't know how they get away with it, but we need this to be on point. Like, we need good delivery and get the chances, get the ball into the fucking net. But, like, yeah, that's a massive thing for me as the right-back situation in particular. And we really, like, Kieran Tierney, I didn't really get to say, but what he did the other night was world-class. Like, I can't stress that, and I don't mean that as a throwaway. He is world-class. And why is it Arsenal? I do not know. He could be playing somewhere huge, in my opinion. A Barca, a PSG, or whatever. I think he's good enough to go and do it. Big, big statement for me, but there you go. Should still be at Celtic, but fuck him. So... I'm kidding on. But we need to get Robbo and Tierney at the right back. We need to get him on, and they need to be firing on all cylinders, and Robertson needs to sort out his delivery, because I think that's the last thing with Robertson. I think it's just a hit and a miss sometimes. And yeah, I know I've just started by saying it. My concern is, I think we are quite similar in our strengths and our weaknesses. It's like opposite sides, set pieces, very similar. We also struggle for set pieces. I worry every time there's a set piece against us, if I'm being totally honest. It's a bit like watching Celtic this season. And my concern is that it's too dogged, that it just ends up a scrappy game. We need to best them. We do need to best them, and we need to do it. This doesn't need to be all over the park. This is the thing. We just have to be smart about it. You've just said about how one goal is literally goals. One singular goal separates us from the other teams. That's all it takes. It's such fine margins in tournament football.
That's how football works, Lindsay.
I know. Shut up, you. But this is the thing. I think a lot of people come in and they go, that would be an easy 3 points, or that would be this, that, and the next thing. It really doesn't matter all that much. Like, we were all devastated after the first game, and I think the only one after the game who had a solid head in his shoulders was big Steve Clark, who was like, yeah, calm down, like, we're not out of this yet. So, like, I was screaming at the news because I was watching him talking about it, and I was like, mate, are you kidding on? Like, we had to win that game. I mean, we're here now. We didn't technically have to win it. This now, We do.
Yeah.
So he's no excuse at the end of this to go, oh, we didn't need to win this one. But, you know, he was right. It's fine margins. We need to attack their weaknesses. We don't need to beat them all over the park. I will not be one bit annoyed if, you know, we're not completely over the top of them. Because I think they've got their strengths. They've got some fantastic individual talent, but so do we. But we need to be attacking that.
Their right-hand side.
Right side and the centre, two centre backs for me need to be kept busy. And we need a bit of luck as well, man. We have not had it at all. I feel like
we don't have luck. We're not lucky. Luck has never been on our side.
Once.
I know. Erin, regarding how you would approach the game, would it be a case of, you know, come out the traps and really kind of put them under pressure from the first whistle? Is it a patience sort of thing? As Kieran alluded to, would you kind of sit off them and maybe hit them on the counter? What would your approach be as we sit here at almost at midday during the day of the game? How would you be looking to approach it?
I think you sit off it a little bit. And I don't mean sit off and just let them have the ball, nothing like that. I think you set the right pressing triggers and you know when you want to go and get it back off them. I think the thing is, Kieran's alluded to, is they can be quite slow in the build-up. They did look a bit short of ideas in the Czech Republic game specifically when they did have possession. I've obviously said, you know, there's some really talented players in our team and there's no point going over them. We already know all about them. We've seen them in plenty of tournaments up until now. We know just how much quality they do have if you give them too much time on it. I think midfield's a really interesting one because we do have legs in there. We've got real legs in there, but we've also got a bit of quality on the ball. I think that's where we can win this game. We've obviously highlighted both their full-back areas, so obviously we'll come to team selection, we'll discuss it. That may factor in the team that I would have picked if I was Steve Clarke. But I think it's about, as a lot of football games are, it's about what you do in transition. Where can we pick the ball off them and how quickly can we punish them? And I think that's probably our best bet, you know, trying to get the ball off them in the right areas and then, as you said, turning it over quickly, getting into dangerous areas from there. Can we win the ball in the middle of the park quite high up, get it out into a wide area quickly? We overlaps and hurt them there. I think that's probably the place. I think, you know, they're really good technically on the ball, so pressing them too high, they'll pick us off if we do that. I think we need to be hard to beat initially, and Steve Clarke will set up that way. That's his natural go-to for setting up a team, not giving them any space, you know, closing passing lanes, ensuring that they can't get in behind us, that they can't hurt us. I think that's the first step, and then we can go and get at them from there. And it's about winning the ball back in good areas and then using it well. And I think we've got the players to do that. I think specifically midfield, you know, as we say, we've got new legs in there, McGregor, McGinn, probably Armstrong. Those are guys who can go and get important interceptions, who can go pick passes and then, you know, flip the game and get us attacking them. But I think it's difficult for me because, you know, personally, I like everything in my body tells me just fucking go for it. Just like get high up the pitch and just go for it. But I think looking at the squad we have, looking at where we are most successful, you know, you look at the England game and most of the good results that we do get over the years, it's about being hard to beat initially and then getting the ball back in good areas and going and punishing teams from there. Set pieces probably will be crucial and always are sort of crucial at this level. I think I'd like to see us improve on that a little bit. But for the most part, probably be hard to beat initially and then try and create chances from there.
Kieran, I know obviously you were kind of caught in between a couple of places. What's your feeling on the approach, and then we can pick the team?
I think Aaron and Lindsay have convinced me a bit to try and at least at the start, maybe be a slightly more cautious and then just take advantage of how hard working and how technical our midfield is. Maybe sort of not necessarily invite the pressure, but just sort of gauge what type of game it's going to be. But and then look to counter at pace through either the wing backs or through McGinn or Adams, and you know, I don't know what you guys feel about Dykes versus Lovren and Vida, because they're obviously two big old school centre halves, and you know, that could work out well. That if Dykes is focusing on them and then Adams is making his runs in behind, that could work really well. I'm just worried that if those guys manage to downplay Dykes, or they just like control Dykes, like what's going to be our out ball if we are under pressure? I think that'll be the big question. But yeah, I think I'm sort of convinced now that we maybe start a bit cautious, but then as we grow into the game, we get a handle of it, maybe feel out Croatia a bit, then we can really start to take the initiative to them.
Is the fear for you, Kieran, that a guy like Dykes is almost food and drink for guys like Vida and Lovren?
I think so, yeah. But I feel like he was out-muscled quite a bit in the Czech game. I think he did really well against Mings and Stones in the England game. But those are more like sort of, you know, quote-unquote progressive type centre-halves who are more focused on being on the ball, whereas Vida and Lovren are just hoof it to fuck type centre-halves, like a Grant Hanley. So I don't know. I'm curious to see what it was, and who knows, Dykes might have a man-of-the-match performance and just barge them out the way, and he's got loads of flick-ons for Adam's hat-trick. But I do think that's going to be a big contest tonight.
I can't believe you hate Lyndon Dykes. So let's pick the team, right, and I'm going to go around and I'll get all your thoughts. I think we can all basically pin our thoughts on David Marshall in goal, Kieran Tierney, the left of a back three, Katie, and Grant Hanley, centre of a back three. I think we can all agree that's more than likely to happen. So from there, who would be your third centre back? Kieran Devlin.
Tommy Tomine. I thought he started a bit shaky against Sterling and again the England game, but I think he really grew into the role and was pretty superb in the end. And just for the balance of the midfield and the defence, because his passing from the defence was really good. And I really think that we, in this game of all games, we need to play that technical midfield, that hard-working technical midfield. So, yeah, McTominay for me.
Lindsay, your thoughts?
Yeah, I went McTominay. I did, after hearing about Gilmore yesterday, I was like, should he go into the midfield?
Yeah.
Should we drop Hendry back in? But the thought of Hendry against what I've just said, the whole left-sided Croatia, which they seem to be pretty solid over there, I just would prefer, for my sake, my mental state, to have McTominay in there. So yeah, he would be my pick.
Erin?
McTominay for me. I've said consistently across these previews, we need someone on the right hand side who can progress the ball in a different way to Tierney does. You know, Tierney's obviously better. I also think McTominay's more disciplined than Hendry. You know, Jack Hendry's decent on the ball, he's a decent ball playing centre half, but we've spoken on this podcast before in different formats about how ill disciplined they can be both in and out of possession. So I think McTominay gives you real discipline and real awareness in there that probably Hendry doesn't. So definitely McTominay for me.
Before we move into midfield, is the Jack Hendry experiment over? Erin, we've done scouting reports, and you and Stephen and Christian have looked at Jack Hendry, and you've been very consistent that he doesn't have the capability to step up to Celtic's level. That's not to say he's a good player. Celtic's level is just quite high in terms of expectations and stuff. Played well against Holland, was a friendly. Is Jack Hendry a first shot, like, you know, in terms of, did people see the real Jack Hendry on Monday? And I really don't mean that to be a dick, but...
No, I think...
Yeah, keep thoughts.
I think you're right. We took a bit of stick doing that loan report for saying that he wasn't good enough. People got really excited about the season in Belgium without watching it.
Yeah.
And that's the reality of it. I mean, I don't want to sound like a dick, but... You know, we did take a little bit of stick for saying that it wasn't going to be good enough. I don't know if you've seen part of what's wrong with Jack Hendry's game against the Czech Republic 100% with that shot, which is crazy. And we've already spoken about that the Marshall position isn't great, blah, blah, blah. It's a bit of brilliance. But Jack Hendry should never be stepping into the game in that way. Even to step into it in that area, he shouldn't have done, and it just shows his ill-discipline. And it all came from the fact that he'd had a shot that hit the bar earlier. He's got excited and he's went for it. I think the Netherlands game, I kept hearing about how well he'd done because he scored this goal where he stepped into a position where you shouldn't really find a centre-half, but it's a good strike and a good finish. But then he gave away soft fouls consistently. He gives away the foul that Depay ends up scoring the equaliser from. So Jack Hendry's a good centre-half, and I'm not going to bash the boy, but you know, we said consistently, me and Stephen took a real good look at him across multiple games this season. And there's all the same flaws there that were there previously.
Yeah,
he gets punished slightly less on it. Oostend don't have the ball quite as often as Celtic, so he looks really progressive. They defend a bit deeper than Celtic do, so it makes it easier for him. His recovery runs aren't quite as hectic, and not he doesn't have to recover quite as often. But when he does, he can be rash. He can also make some really good last-ditch challenges. At Celtic, where he has to be much more creative, have a much better variety of passing to beat teams who just sit in the two banks of a bank of four and a bank of five and make it really tough. He just doesn't have the quality to break down teams in that aspect. You know, he can circulate the ball quite well, but and then with a high line that Celtic play, he's really susceptible. So without bashing him too much, I think what you've seen now is that Jack Hendry's just that little bit short of being an international footballer or a Celtic centre half, I think, and that's highlighted by the fact that you want a midfielder to go play in there ahead of them.
Yeah, I think, you know, we watched the Austria game a couple of weeks ago, a month or two ago. He was at fault almost for both goals. Then Steve Clark leaves him out the next game, doesn't play him, then starts him against the Czech Republic. And I know people will say, well, that was due to the fact that Tierney was injured. Doesn't matter now, it's in the past, but it was just all very disappointing. Okay, so three at the back, midfield five. Kieran, Robertson's a stick on for that left hand side, of course, so we don't even have to mention him. Who's your three in the middle? Who's Kieran Devlin's three in the middle to take on Croatia in a generational game?
McGregor McGinn, I think, is going to be in everyone's team. I'm tempted to go Armstrong, and I know he was shit against the Czech Republic, but I do think he was given very explicit instructions to best drift left to help Robertson. And I think he gets a bit of stick in terms of him as a possession player, I think it's just more like, I think he is good on the ball. I think he's just most of the time his manager at Southampton or Scotland tell him to constantly press or constantly try and do something ambitious. Saying that, I would probably drop McGinn to alongside McGregor,
yeah,
and then have Armstrong just ahead of him, but not like in the number 10, just the same sort of triangle, not as like a playmaker or whatever. So yeah, that would be my midfield.
Lindsay, yourself, your three.
Mate, I struggled with this, but McGregor, McGinn. I don't know, man.
It is tough. I mean, this. I think that
I've got. I'll tell you the two names, right? But maybe I'm totally wrong because you know you've came in and said Fleck. And I know we gave you up your baiting for it, but I know everybody in the tartan scarf was talking about it last night. I think he was in their team and seems the natural. I've just not seen him play, if I'm being honest with you, in a long time. So the two I had was Christie, but he would play like McGinn and McGregor would hold.
Yeah,
and then Christie or McGregor Tumble. Holding with McGinn, but I think I would go Christie.
So in that three, basically you've got McGregor, very much like Kieran, but instead of Armstrong you've got Christie. Interesting, yeah. Interesting. Erin, yourself, sir?
It's a hard one because I was tempted to go Christie to try and get him in and around Modric's toes, maybe not giving Modric too much time on it. But then I looked at that and I thought, that's three left-sided players. Does that leave us off balance?
Good point.
And also, I know Christie for Scotland is a different player. We've obviously seen that a handful of times, but then I thought he was really poor against Czech Republic. I thought Armstrong took some really undue criticism against the Czech Republic for a couple of loose passes, but I think you could clearly see he was being asked to play on that left-hand side, as Kieran said. And he actually played a couple of really good passes to Robertson. He got on the ball. We didn't get him the ball enough in good areas, but I think when he did get on the ball, that Robertson overlap, Armstrong was, the role had changed because Tierney wasn't there, and it made it difficult for him because he was then being asked to go and link up with Robertson the way that Tierney probably would have, and Robertson would have drifted inside. So
very true.
The role slightly changed, and I thought Armstrong got a bit of undue stick. I think just in the... For the sake of balance in the team, I think I would leave McGinn where he is, play McGregor, and I would ask Morrow. Now, he's not going to take the ball quite as much off your back four, so maybe you're going to ask a little bit more of McGregor in that aspect, but I think Armstrong for me.
Would that change it from a 2-1 to a 1-2, or would it still be 2?
It would still be 2. I think Armstrong's still capable of coming into a double pivot and alongside McGregor. He's just not quite as good as Gilmore at that, and I think we just have to accept that in terms of the role. But I think what Armstrong could do, he's probably got more legs and he can probably get in touch with the forward players more. So if it is building up on the other side, if McGregor comes and takes it, I think Armstrong can go and get in touch with the forward players alongside McGinn.
I think the three of you are right in terms of, you know, Tierney back in this team completely changes how this team functions, and when the team functions differently, individual roles function differently. So you would be asking Armstrong to do something different from what he did on Monday. I thought he was a little exposed on Monday, and I think that's down to the system, because, you know, Cooper wasn't pushing up the way that Tierney would, and yeah, I mean, there's a lot of factors on that. So I think Tierney backing in the team and that left-hand side pushing up, I don't think McGinn, and again, this is just my personal opinion, I don't think McGinn plays well when he's part of that too. I think he really struggles. And whenever, it's usually about the 60th minute at a game, a qualifier, that Clark puts McGinn in the one position and all of a sudden the game changes. I think we've seen that a number of times. So I would be keen to leave McGinn where he is. Yeah. I'm not convinced with Armstrong or Christie in that. Why can't
John Fleck?
Fleckers, the Fleckmeister General. why bring him if you're not going to play him?
Yeah.
Don't play him. don't play him.
Wait till he starts. I'm coming back on Twitter if John Fleck starts to harass you.
Fuck. Imagine putting a man in the match performance.
Yeah, I'd be fucking deleted.
Mate, I don't care. Honestly, play whoever. They get a goal in a man in the match.
Lindsay, that right hand side.
Why did you come at me first? Because this has been an absolute headache, man.
That right hand side, go on.
I really want to say O'Donnell, right? Because he proved me wrong in the first game after I cemented him, right? and he played so well against England. He did. I just worry about Croatia's left-hand side, and it's not, we have no fallback. There's no plan B here. Like, this is it. This is the moment. And you've just said yourselves about how, you know, he plays better when there's no expectation. This is the expectation to end all expectations. Like, we need a win. So I really want to trust him, but I'm worried we need a wee bit more pace than him. But I wouldn't put Jamesy in there because Jamesy can't defend, in my opinion, not very well. Fraser? I don't know.
Well, hold on a minute. So James Forrest can't defend, but Ryan Fraser can. Is that?
No. I just said, I don't know. I just don't know if I did. Do you know what? Stephen O'Donnell's going in, but I mean, he better turn up.
You'd hope so. Kieran Devlin, who is your right wing back?
I'm going to say fuck it, Robertson and Forrest. I know it's fallible and stuff, but I just want to see him, just Forrest, plant that teenage prick on his arse.
Jesus
that
Christ!
That left back. I just want Forrest to cut and then cut for Dykes to shove Vida in the goal and head it into the back of the net.
Or like all planned.
Yeah. Or go for the Lindsay's approach and have McGinn just like knock over the line with his arse. That's what I want.
However it goes in, as long as it counts. Aaron Connolly.
I think it needs to be O'Donnell initially. I think Forrest is a really good option to have depending on how the game goes. I think Stephen O'Donnell, I can't believe I'm saying it, but sort of proved a lot of his probably wrong. Maybe, I don't know, I found myself thinking maybe I need to stop being so harsh on players when I come on things like this and, you know, go off the nut after one bad performance. I think Lindsay said it earlier, I need to remember they're human, and O'Donnell has his
the Czech game was beyond,
it was awful.
It was beyond a bad performance.
It was awful, right? Of course it was, but you know, these guys are playing a national tournament where we sit in a podcast, so maybe that there's just a reality check for me for a while. I don't know. O'Donnell's, he's not great. We know that. He's not great offensively. He's not even great defensively. He's probably slightly better defensively than he is offensively. I think what he does give you, but is a bit of balance. If the reason he doesn't bomb forward quite so much is probably because we're so lopsided, because we've got such quality on the left-hand side, so he can probably give you that balance. My worry would be you start James Forrest there and you have Robertson and Tierney also getting down the left. You're looking at McTominay and Hanley defending against any counter-attacks. Maybe McGregor sits in, so that gives me the worry. Don't get me wrong, half an hour to go in the game, need a goal. James Forrest is probably the first guy I bring off the bench and O'Donnell comes off and we then go try and go for a bit. But I think setting up pragmatically in the way that Scotland, that suits us better, being Scotland, and that suits Steve Clarke better, suits the squad we have, I think O'Donnell deserves to start.
Is this the toughest kind of lineup choice that a manager will ever have to do, and from a Scotland perspective, in that, excuse me, would I win away? Because you are kind of caught, you're caught between two places. It is a, if Steve Clarke sets up in a fairly defensive way, both from a personnel standpoint and from how we approach the game, and we lose 1-0 or it finishes 0-0, he'll get criticised for not going for it. If he goes for it and we get hit in the counter attack, you know, and that, I guess that's, I mean, that's every, you know, choice that you have as a football manager, but this isn't a league game. There's not a game next week. There's this. This is it. And I really do have a lot of sympathy for
Steve Clarke. That's how tournament football works, Chris.
I just have to say that's insane. That's very good. I feel like I've been made an absolute prick off here. I just hands off. Hands up. Hands off. Jesus. Very good, Lindsay. I'm annoyed at how good that was. I'll be honest with you. I'm quite annoyed. Look, it's going to be Dykes and Adams up front. Would we all agree?
Yep.
Hands up. Yep.
Kevin Nisbet. Jay Adams. Thank you.
I can just stay false nine. I don't.
Well, hold on a minute, actually.
No, don't.
Oh, for God's sake.
The way Dykes and Adams performed, you would imagine they would start. Yeah. Okay, cool. That's the team. we have chosen Marshall in goals, Kieran Tierney, Grant Hanley and McTominay as your back four. Robertson on the left-hand side, O'Donnell slash Forrest on the right-hand side, McGinn, McGregor and Armstrong slash Christie with Dykes and Adams up front. Yeah, I think that's probably those two positional changes is what I think everything will kind of hinge on for Steve Clark, and it'll be interesting to see what he goes with. Let's finish up with predictions, and we'll start with Lindsay Hamilton. Predictions first. If you name, give us a score and give us any Scotland goal scorers. Lindsay?
I'm going Scotland 2-1. And I'm going to go with McGregor.
Oof.
Because you just compared him to McStay, and McStay scored at the Euros.
That's true.
Against the CIS, I think. I hope that's correct.
That's correct, yeah.
And, yep, and I'm going to go... I really want Lyndon Dykes to have his moment, man. I feel like he deserves it, and I'd like it to be him. So 2-1 Scotland, Dykes and McGregor, please.
Who scores the winner?
Well, here's the voice of Erin Connolly. Prediction and goal scorers, please, sir.
I think...
You do this all the time, copy my answers.
That's because you get to go first. I think 2-1 as well, and I think that it will be Adams and Dykes will both score.
Excellent.
And I think we'll get a late winner.
Okay. Keza?
You know what? I'm going to go against type. I'm going to say 2-0. I just feel good about this team. And I might be absolutely devastated by 10 o'clock. That is a very real possibility. But I'm going 2-0. I'm going Adams in the first half, then McGinn in the second.
Just want to highlight a couple of points. This was highlighted by a Twitter user. I can't remember who it was, and I'm really sorry if I'm not giving you credit. But everyone who has ever scored for Scotland at the Euros has their name begins with MC. McStay, McClare, McAllister, McCoist. And currently in our squad, we have McTominay, McGregor, McGinn and McKenna. All of the goals that we've scored have came in the final match day.
Yeah, the third game. Yeah.
So 3-0 against the CIS and 1-0 against Switzerland. McGregor is 28 and plays for Celtic, same as McStay when he scored. Do not compare Paul McStay and Callum McGregor. even though I did earlier.
Yeah.
No. I'd love nothing more than Callum McGregor to get his... to get his goal to... He's had a really tough season. We've all had tough seasons, but, you know, he's been on the front line and he's been battered and he's had to take up, you know... Yeah, let's just hope. We're in it now. I mean, right now, we're recording this. It's 11:26 and we're still in this tournament. And we've got everything to look forward to. You know, Whatever happens after this game, that's future... Erin, Chris, Kieran and Lindsay's problem. It could be good, it could be negative. We're Schrodinger's football team. We're in the tournament and we're kind of out of the tournament at the same time because we're Scotland. But look, really looking forward to it. Where are you watching the game, Erin Connolly?
I'm just watching it in the house. So I'll be watching it probably a game, and I don't really like watching football with people when it's big games.
Lovely, surrounded by hundreds of wee babies and all that, amazing.
All the weens.
Kieran Devlin, where are you watching it yourself,
though? I'm watching it in my living room. Again, just later, and I'll just be trying to be alone, try and force Caroline, my girlfriend, next door, because otherwise I get really anxious and snarky. So, yeah, I think I'll be doing it.
Naked, of course, Kieran, you'll be naked.
Yeah, always.
Always, lovely. Lindsay, where will you be watching it yourself?
Yeah, myself, because like Erin and Kieran, I don't have in the Micros. We joke in there. No, I'll be watching with my big bro and my dad, most likely, and probably my nana, who's the most pessimistic person you could ever meet in your life. In fact, when Czech Republic scored the first goal, and she went, oh, well, they had a good tournament. And I was like, Jesus, it was the first game, but okay. Yeah, the all-seeing magic eight ball that is my nana. But I'll just be watching it with a couple of tinnies in the gaff. Looking forward to it, man. Very much looking forward to it.
Well, I'm going to meet my father for some mid-afternoon drinks to get in the mood, and then I'm back here to watch it. And come on. Eh? I mean...
I have a dream.
Come on. Just once. Eh? Because I do think, I really do think this, if we break this hoodoo now, that's it broken.
Sky's the limit.
And it doesn't even matter what happens in the next tournament, even if we qualify or not, just to break that hoodoo and to tell every player coming up that we can qualify for the latter stages, it changes the complexion of everything. It really does. And come on. Erin Connolly, Kieran Devlin, Lindsay Hamilton, fantastic. Thank you for your input. This has been wonderful. It's got me G'd up for the game and I'm excited. I'm Chris Gallagher. This has been The Preview. Come on!